Reading from the Jiva Dharma, Chapter 2. This is actually the best. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Vijnana Timarandasya Gananjana Ashalakaya. Taksu Unmulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Dapitam Yena Bhutale. Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam. Vanchakalpa Tarubhyashta Kripa Shindu Bhayevacha. Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I feel more comfortable without the speakerphone. Okay, well, greetings from, what's this called? Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I'm at the home of Monica Moore, who I met in India. Rati Krishna is with me also, who facilitates the Sangha. And we're at a 100-acre farm. And then tomorrow, our parents will invite their friends. It's always interesting to go to different places. And last night, we were in Reading, Pennsylvania, Down Dog Yoga. So we're having a nice time. Prithiviti yati achi nagaradi gram. Lord Chaitanya said that his name will be chanted. Krishna's name will be chanted. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says Krishna's name will be chanted in every town and village. And more we can see that that prediction is coming true. I mean, recently I saw that Bibi Govinda Swami was playing Hare Krishna mantra to like a, with a symphony orchestra behind him, and like, I don't know, some kind of gospel singers, and just in every way. So it's kind of nice to see the, and you know, even to think of how it all started. Prabhupada came and sat under a tree in Tompkins Square Park and began chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. But how did he chant? He chanted with pure devotion. See, the name, actually studying the Yoga Sutras, it was interesting, but I think it's applied. The name is Prakritic, and they're just syllables. But they're syllables designated by God to represent God in a way that God appears and energizes. And the example is going, you put an iron ball in fire, it becomes heat and light. So somehow those sounds, when they're chanted, they become spiritualized. And the more the heart is pure, the more heat and light manifest. It's a receptacle. It becomes heat and light, but the degree of the fire in your heart to serve God, and the highest fire to serve God is called Shudanam. It's the pure name. It's like the difference between the sun at noon on your head and the sun at dawn. The dawn is Namabhas. The heat and light is there. But what is it at noon? So Shudanam is the name at noon. And when that vibration comes into those syllables, the full potency and manifestation of Krishna. It's very powerful. So I'm saying, by chanting that pure name, then so many people became affected. And that came in their hearts, and that's called Guru Parampara. Right? Two things here, Guru Parampara and Anda Parampara. Guru Parampara means someone's experience is communicated to you. And he has that experience because that experience was communicated to him. And it goes in a line of teachers. The Anda Parampara, which I got from Pradyumna, my godbrother, he said it means blind parampara. It means teachers without experience. So they don't have experience. He gave the example, if you're trying to communicate color, then if the person's blind, how can he tell you shades of brown, shades of blue? He doesn't have the experience. So that pure name comes with people who've experienced it. And then they communicate that pure name. And it has potency. People become affected. So I'm sitting out here in 100 Acre Farm in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, with the forensic scientist and chief coroner of Harrisburg and the former Miss Texas sitting with their daughter and Rati Krishna talking about spiritual things. And I love when the chief coroner, you know, they're the ones on those TV shows who solve all the crimes with the things, like that's what they do. But sitting there and just telling me, his daughter gave him the book about Prabhupada with the Beyond Reason and Doubt, discussing with the philosophers, and how much he was appreciating, you know, Prabhupada's points and the things like that. So it's just another part of the Leela of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how his holy name just comes in so many ways and forms. And then tomorrow I'll have a program and have to meditate deeply. What do I speak? These are not people from the yoga frame of reference. This is kind of like Middle America. But, what? No, I was going to say that. You can't speak for me. As soon as I said it, I realized it's like Middle America with it's conservative, high integrity, compassionate. You know, so and intellectual in some ways. So it's interesting, you know. He told me how he's saying that. I'm not saying this is the view, but it was an interesting thought. You know, he said that the biggest problem with gun control is that people are not have values. He described when he went to school. He came with his shotgun to high school, and the principal said, whatever the name is, you know, said, sir, he said, if you unloaded the gun, you know, make sure it's not clicked. Put it in the... But, you know, it's good to see life from a different perspective, but the main perspective is God is in the center, sincerely. So it was a very nice discussion. Okay, Monica. really, it's enjoyable. Okay, so we're going to read now. So Jivadharma, remember the story of Jivadharma was so nice? Remember that, right? The Premdas Babaji, he's sitting in this kunj, chanting 2 lakhs of names. He has the pure name of Krishna in his heart. He's meditating deeply on Krishna's pastime. The name has revealed the form and the qualities and the pastimes. So when he's chanting, he's seeing the Leela of Krishna and seeing himself within that Leela. and feeling the devotion and perspective. The very high level. And he's so very pure, and then this sannyasi came who somehow or other was at a very high level of devotion, of renunciation. But when he somehow in his meditation saw a Mahabhagavat, the topmost devotee, in praying, chanting the names of Lord Gauranga and Chaitanya, it had a profound effect on him. It gave him a drop of the pleasure of love that is way beyond any other type of happiness you can get. It even explains that you cannot compare material happiness at the highest level to a realization of Brahman, to actually understand God's presence. But if you multiply that 1,000 times, it won't even equal a drop of God's love, prema bhakti. So he was on a high level, but not love. It's a happiness. It's an incredible sense of happiness. But it's not love. And it's not that supreme love, that prema bhakti that's found within the hearts of these pure devotees. But somehow, to make a long story short, because I do give these classes regularly, don't want to repeat too much for the people who've been listening regularly, but we know that this sannyasi goes and he surrenders to this Premdas Babaji. And you see, what you love is when you hear these stories, you not only hear the philosophy, but you see the character and life of people, and how people on the platform of pure love actually relate to each other. How the students and teachers and equals and colleagues, and how they actually relate on this stage of pure love. And it's pure love because God is in the center of each relationship. So the ego is never there. No one, you know, puts his stake in, I am in the center, and objects are mine, and therefore you should move this way, because in my world, you moving this way is better for me. And in fact, unless you give up and become free from selfish desire or shift that consciousness to servant of Krishna, to the extent that you don't do that, is the extent that you cannot practice ahimsa or nonviolence. We can't do that. So, it's so beautiful. We see all these relationships based on love and what that world is. A world where people are not putting themselves in the center, but they're putting God in the center. And then he asked a question. And the question is, I thought Dharma is universal, but I see so many people have all different Dharmas. How do you explain that? And the answer was explained in very much detail, and the point was very beautiful. There is, I'll ask you, Monica, what are the two types of Dharma? Explain. Nitya Dharma? And right, and conventional dharma or temporary. Nitya dharma, naimittika dharma. So he explained that the eternal dharma, which is the nature of the soul, is to serve God. Is to serve God. That's the eternal dharma, is to serve God. That doesn't change in any circumstance. That is your responsibility eternally. It was before, it was now, it will be in the future. Whether or not you meet that responsibility or not. And actually, unless you meet that responsibility, and unless you line up your life with that consciousness, and that's also I described too. I mean, basically, you know, the way that's done basically the way that's done is a shift in consciousness. When one has teacher and surrenders to teacher, then the consciousness shifts. Bhakti is basically more than working on the mind or working on the intelligence. It works on the ahankara, the function of the mind of self-identity. It starts with a change of self-identity from I am the enjoyer and the controller that I am to I am committed to be the servant of Guru and Krishna. And that's the liberated platform, because there's no ego in that. It's not an easy thing. But anyone who is a saint is because they change that self-identity. So that's the goal. That's the eternal Dharma. But to get to that point, we are in different psychophysical conditions. And to be satisfied and peaceful in mind so that we can meditate and focus on that, then we have other duties and responsibilities. But they're based on the psychophysical condition, which changes. So they're conventional or temporary. It's Naimittika Dharma. You know, you have a responsibility as a mother, right? But then your child grows up, then your responsibilities change. Or maybe that's not an example. You are you're a married person and you have responsibilities as a married person. But there may become a time in your life where you're not married. or you legitimately mature and just renounce that, then that changes. Or in one life you're a Brahmin, the next life you're that. That change. It doesn't mean that they're not your duties, but those duties are variant and they're dependent on external circumstances and they change. So it's such a beautiful answer that he gave. What is the eternal Dharma? And my favorite part is the analogy is how it somehow or other becomes transformed by conditions or circumstances. In other words, you're not loving. You're egotistical, right? Whatever. You're not purely realized in that way. But that doesn't mean that that's not your essence. It's like the essence of ice is still water. It's just been, its liquidity has been transformed. So you have to put yourself back in circumstances that make the ice water, if you want that, to make the selfishness service. Plus, the main way is by focusing on the holy name, having that presence. God appears in two ways. It's called Vachika, I think, Vachya. He appears as the what is expressed and the expressor. I'm trying to put this the form and the name. And Baladev Vidyabhushan's commentaries say God appears in these two ways and they're equal. So God is actually appearing not only in his form. It's, you know, like his manifestation, his form, he's appearing in sound in his name. So if we take that to heart and we focus on it and have that realization how important this is, and we focus on it without, Yoga Sutra says three things: for a long time, without interruption, and with reverence and understanding. We meditate, no break. Otherwise, it's not yoga. It doesn't control you. No break. With understanding and meaning, which means, of course, with devotion and love and humility, then it draws out that sense of our soul, which is to serve God. So Anyway, it was a beautiful answer, and he explained it very elaborately. So now what happens is the next morning, the sannyas Thakur, he doesn't find an opportunity to inquire from Prem Das because he was immersed in this Brajabhav, meditating on the moods of devotion. It was a very high level of absorption. And when you get to the level of samadhi, you're not even cognizant of what's outside. You're not even cognizant of yourself. You're only cognizant of the devotion you have and the object which you are devoted for. It's just, you're not even cognizant of anything. So at midday, after accepting alms from the house of villagers, because I explained before they do Madhukari, they're just chanting. How do they eat? It's a very high form of diet and renunciation. You just walk and beg from these houses, and whatever you get, you eat. It's called Madhukari, Kari, to do like Madhu, like a bee. Bee takes a little from here, a little from here, a little from there, a little from there. Very pure sense. And they sit together in this flower house in Gojramdweep called Madhavi Malati Mandap. Mandap is like a covering, a tent of just beautiful. Look at the udipin. Look at the inspiration for spiritual life in that atmosphere where the glory of God and the fragrance of beautiful flowers reminds you of love. Reminds you, it's a beauty is an offering of love. When you sin, when you're a devotee, you see it as that. You see it as a God's energy being offered in love and therefore manifesting such beauty. So this Prem Das Babaji, he begins to speak to this Sannyas Thakur, and he says, "O best of the sadhus, what conclusions have you reached after yesterday's discussion on the subject of Dharma?" So a good teacher sees if the students learned. And that's the teacher's love. Teacher's love for the student is he wants to see them learn. Therefore, he'll ask questions and test that they've learned. And this Sannyas Thakur, just in association with this Prem Das Babaji, Paramanand. Anand means devotion, and Paramanand means the supreme bliss he's feeling. So now he asks this question. Prabhu, if the soul or jiva is infinitesimal, how can his eternal dharma be full and pure? How can it be full? How can it be pure? If it's infinitesimal. And if the natural function of the jiva is formed at the time he is constituted, then how can it be eternal? So you see, at this level also of exchange, doubts are welcomed. Not that I doubt it because it's wrong. I doubt it because I don't understand. And that type of exchange matures the knowledge and understanding in the student. It's very interesting how he answered. I'm going to read too, but I remember this, that if it's infinitesimal, but he said, it's such a nice analogy, it's like a spark from a fire. Right, a spark from a fire. It's very infinitesimal compared to the fire. But connected to the fire, it has full potency. It can even become a full fire, practically. So when we are connected, when we're connected, we have so much power. When we're connected to God, we get the power of God. But we're infinitesimal. But the connection gives us power. Anyway, when Paramahamsa Babaji of Prem, he heard these two questions, he meditated on the lotus feet of Sri Satchinandana and then smilingly said, "Respected sir, although the jiva is infinitesimal, his dharma is full and eternal, nitya. Minuteness is only a trait by which he is identified. Krishna is the one and only infinite substance, God. And the jivas are his innumerable atomic particles. Like sparks emanating from an undivided fire, the jivas emanate from Krishna, who is the embodiment of immutable consciousness." Now listen, this is the sentence. "Just as every spark is endowed with the potency of the complete fire, so each and every jiva is capable of displaying the full function of consciousness." Consciousness is such a beautiful thing. The full expression of consciousness is what? Love. Because consciousness, what is consciousness? Consciousness, the nature of consciousness is devotion. And what's the fullest expression of devotion? It's love. It's prema. So infinitesimal does not limit love. Size doesn't limit love. So the soul can experience and manifest full love. It has nothing to do, as it says here, it's a trait which he's identified with. It's one of the traits of the soul is minuteness. But that doesn't contradict the ability to fully love. Why should it? When does size have anything to do with love? Anandam buddhi vardhanam. One of the natures of chanting the holy name is the ocean of unlimited bliss. If a single spark has enough fuel, it can kindle a blazing fire that will incinerate the whole world. Similarly, even a single jiva can inundate the entire world with love if he attains Krishna Chandra, who is the real object of love. A single living entity is so minute. How much love can they have? Unlimited. It's the potency of God that comes through them. Not limited by size. Love is not dimensional in that way. It's another dimension. We can have a big heart. It doesn't refer that you know, you got this huge organ within your body. However, the infinitesimal conscious jiva cannot exhibit the natural development of his spiritual function as long as he fails to contact the real object of that function. So beautiful. The jiva can't manifest this. It's the natural development of who the jiva is if he doesn't contact God. In reality, it is only when the jiva is in connection with his object that the identity of his dharma becomes apparent. So he's saying, yes, it's minute, it can be covered, and therefore you don't see its function. But that function is there. It's like the ice, the water is there, even though the liquidity is completely compromised. But if the liquidity wasn't there, you wouldn't be able to melt it. What is the Nitya Dharma or eternal constitutional function of the jiva? Because that was his other question. You must examine this question carefully. Transcend the love for Krishna is the Jiva's Nitya Dharma. That's what we are supposed to do. That's what we are for. Beyond all the shapes and forms we see in this world, ultimately there's God and God's energies. And the energies of God are meant to serve God. The essence of all energy is Ladini Shakti, the pleasure potency, and the essence of that is love of Godhead. That's what's happening. What's happening is God is enjoying. He's enjoying this ocean of love. And we're meant to be part of that with our volition and will. Because love has volition. We're meant to be part of that. Therefore, the constitutional function of the jiva is service to Krishna, which is the nature of prema. You can't serve anybody without love. It's not service. Work. It's oppression. It's fear. You think about it. Let's have a comedy show. Husband and wife are, you know, arguing. Right? And the husband comes home and the wife cooks a meal and she like throws it on the table looking away. That's not service. Service has love. You know what a servant is? The Sanskrit for servant? It's called sevak. So they say without the seva, without the mood of seva, then you take away the seva and it becomes vak. Vak is what? It's the duck demon, Bakasura. You take away the seva, it's just a duck. It's nothing. You're just quacking. You're not loving. The jiva has two conditions, the pure liberated state and the conditioned state. You have two states, love or not love. It's just, you know, that's it. So there's two real states of the jiva. In the liberated state, the jiva is spiritual and has no connection with mundane matter. However, even in that pure condition, he is still an infinitesimal entity. Again, same point. In the pure condition, what he remains what he is. He's just pure. He's either small, conditioned, small, love. It doesn't change his size. It's just his consciousness changes. I feel better because I'm using a landline. And I'm not burning out my brain cells with the... Okay, so far we're all following? Okay. The jiva can undergo a change in condition because he has the quality of minuteness. So because he's infinitesimal, he can have this change of love and no love. The consciousness can be covered. Krishna, however, never undergoes a change of condition, for by his very nature, he is the entity of infinite cognition. By his essential constitution as a vastu, a factual thing, he is supreme, completely pure and eternal, whereas the jiva, by his essential constitution as a vastu, a thing, he's minute, a part, liable to contamination and subject to repeated change. The unadulterated spiritual function, Dharma of the Jiva, is also great, undivided, pure, and everlasting. But he may become atomic, incomplete, and impure. As long as the Jiva is pure, his Dharma displays its spotless character. You know, in the Yoga Sutras, which I'm studying, there's one point which and I spoke to Mahamuni about this, who's a philosopher too, that they cannot explain clearly. Because they try to ascribe all thought to just the material mind. All thought in the material mind. But if all thought is in the material mind, then we have nothing to do with liberation. Because it has nothing to do, the transformation has nothing to do in us. Right? And we can't explain, how can you explain, how is the soul an illusion? Because illusion indicates a condition of the consciousness. Right? So what is the condition of the soul when it's in this, when it's in this illusion that it's the body? If it's not something within the soul, then what is happening? It's all happening in matter. Has nothing. You're completely, has nothing to do with you. But here in this consciousness, yes, when we're hearing Shastra, it's increasing our determination. It's affecting our soul. It's clearing up our vision. There's some vritti, there's some movement in the soul eternally. In other words, here's the mind and the body, it's transforming, right? And our image is, okay, that's not us that's transforming, right? Vikara, transformation happens in the mind, right? Like disease, death, old age, that's happening to the body, not us. The soul is not influenced by that, right? But the soul's identifying with that. So there has to be something within. If the soul is always pure, right, unchanged, not affected, then who cares what happens in matter? Isn't it? There's no meaning to Shastra then. There's no meaning to Shastra. If there's not something in us that's changing, then what's the purpose of what, you know? Anyway, so as long as, however, when he's contaminated by involvement with Maya, his true nature is perverted, and he becomes impure, bereft of shelter, and oppressed by mundane happiness and distress. The jiva's course of material existence comes into effect as soon as he forgets. That's, who's forgetting? His attitude of service to Krishna. You can't talk about liberation and illusion without ascribing some mental processes to the soul. There must be a pure mind. There must be a pure intelligence. Other, it doesn't mean anything. Otherwise, what is happening? The soul, if everything is just in matter, then how is the soul being affected by it? The soul's identifying with it? Well, that's a conception. What is happening that connects the soul? That there must be something that happens there. Isn't it? Clear? As long as the jiva remains pure, he maintains his identity and self-conception in accordance with his unadulterated spiritual function. His innate and original egoism is therefore rooted in the conception that he's a servant of Krishna. Again, the same concept. Bhakti deals with the self-identity. You change your self-identity. That's the commitment in spiritual life. And when we change that commitment, we no longer are feeding the ego. And that's not an easy thing. That's called surrender. It's not called renunciation. because surrender means to follow the will of Guru and Krishna. And their will has to do also with your attachments and desires that have to be satisfied, because that's part of Dharma. It may be Naimittika Dharma, but it's still, when you're in that condition, that is your duty. And why is it your duty? Because it facilitates your service to Krishna. Arjuna, the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, and Arjuna surrendered to Krishna. Right? And what did Krishna tell him? You fight. Why? Because it is your nature. However, that pure egoism, recedes and assumes many different forms as soon as he's contaminated by association with Maya. And what is Maya? As soon as you somehow or other, they don't know how it happens or why it happens, as soon as you have the conception that I want to be anything else but a servant of God, so many things happen. Ishad Upay Tasya, I quote this many times, the Bhagavatam describes what's the essence of bhakti. So it says, Bayam Dutiya Biniveshita Shat Ishad Upay Tasya Viparyayo Smiti. Ishad Upay Tasya, you turn from God. Turning from God means what? How can you turn from God? God's everywhere. It's only a matter of consciousness. When you don't want to be what you are, which is a servant of God, or when you want to be what you're not, when you want to be the controller and enjoyer, for God to fulfill that desire, he has to put you in the illusion that there is no enjoyer and controller besides you. In other words, when you forget God, you forget yourself, because what you are is in relationship to God. So somehow, when you turn from God, turn from that desire, Ishadu Petasya Viparyo Smriti, you forget who you are. When you turn from God, you forget who you are, but you have to accept another identity. And there comes these many, many forms, many, many nationalities, many, many species, many, many. So it says the gross and subtle bodies then cover his pure constitutional identity, and as a result, a different egoism emerges in the subtle body. So you just, in other words, when you want to be the enjoyer and controller, a position which you cannot have by your constitution, you can only satisfy something that is that exceeds reality by illusion. When you want to be something that you're not, it can only be fulfilled in the illusion that you're not. When you want to satisfy something that is not, you have to be in the illusion that it is. So what it says here, when you don't want to be what you are, which is a servant of God, then, and you develop a false ego, then to satisfy that, the conscious, someone's waiting on the phone. That's okay. Then the consciousness becomes reflected on a mind and body to give you that experience. I am the enjoyer, I am the controller. And there's a myriad of those experiences. I am the controller, enjoyer, man. I am the controller, enjoyer, woman. I am the controller, you know, king. I am the controller, enjoyer, this. I am the controller, enjoyer, elephant. I am the enjoyer. And the consciousness becomes reflected. When the soul combines, when this combines with the soul's identification with the gross body, a third form of egoism is assumed. In his spiritual form, the jiva is exclusively a servant of Krishna. When the jiva identifies with the subtle body, his original pure egoism of being a servant of Krishna is covered, and he thinks he can enjoy the fruits of his action. He then obtains a gross body and thinks, I am Brahmin, I am king, I am poor, I am miserable, I am overwhelmed by disease and lamentation, I am a woman, I am the master of this person and that person. Thus he identifies himself with many types of gross bodily conceptions. When the jiva associates with these different types of false egoisms, his constitutional function becomes perverted. When you identify with that, you're identifying with your desire to enjoy and control. When you identify with your body in any way, you're identifying with your desire to enjoy and control. And your function as a servant of Krishna starts to become distorted. Naham vipro chanada patir vaishno nasudro. When you do deity worship, the first thing you have to do is called Shuddha Buddha. You have to assume a spiritual condition. To worship Krishna, you have to have a pure form. So you have to chant, you chant mantras to say, Naham vipro Nachadapati or Vaishnava. I'm not this, I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Sudra, I'm not this, I'm not this, I'm not this, I'm this. What am I? Gopi Bharta Parakamala Dasa Dasa. I am the servant of the servant of the servant of the gopis. The intrinsical constitutive function of the jiva is unalloyed prema. This prema manifests in a perverted way in the subtle body in the form of happiness and distress, attachment, aversion, and so on. This perversion is observed in a more concentrated form in the gross body as the pleasure of eating, drinking, and contact with sense objects. So the function of prema becomes perverted. It becomes perverted to mundane love, mundane affection, which actually has the, it's I love this because it makes me great. You should understand clearly that the eternal function of the jiva is manifest only in its pure state. The dharma that arises in the conditioned state is known as naimittika, circumstantial. Nitya dharma is by nature complete, pure, and eternal. I've explained circumstantial dharma at length in another day. Okay, are there any questions? Would anyone like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Hello?
Hi, Gail. Krishna.
Hi, Krishna. Yeah. Turn on the speaker, please. 1 second, Gail. Yeah, Gail?
Yes. Well, a couple of things. Well, one is it was interesting to hear that you're in Harrisburg when I kind of just left there not too long ago because I was in Gitanagri for the weekend.
When were you in Gitanagri, Gail?
Yeah, I was there for Bhaktivedanta Swami's Vyasa Puja on Saturday and then a wedding on Sunday. And it was like, it was such a wonderful, ecstatic experience for me, you know, because the devotees
were
so... Excuse me?
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, the devotees are just so loving, and the you know, he has disciples. Dr. Shiva Swami has disciples, a large contingent of disciples from Ghana. When they lead kirtan, it's like one of the two things in Krishna consciousness that actually move my heart. It's just a treasurable experience, their kirtan.
It gets out.
Excuse me?
You get the djembe, is that called it?
Oh, djembe, I'm sorry. Three things that move my heart. how did you know that? Yeah, well, anyway. Oh, yeah, because you know they often play this.
Ask you something, Gail. Is that Nitya Dharma or Naimittika Dharma?
No, that's Nitya Dharma, I'm sorry. That's definitely Nitya Dharma.
Okay.
Yeah, the djembe for me is like the flute for the gopis. Definitely. But yeah. Anyway, I did have a question about. Well, I had two questions. One quick one is, you know, would you say that it's an appropriate analogy to say that, you know, how you were explaining how the minuteness of the soul doesn't mean that it loves less? So I was thinking that, you know, just because you only have a drop of water versus an ocean doesn't mean that the drop of water is any less wet, you know? A drop of water is just as wet, huh?
I guess it's kind of an example, but you can't wash with it. It can't quench your thirst.
Yeah, but just like the jiva also can't do everything that Krishna does, even though it's the same qualitatively.
True. So it has, okay, it's not any less wet, so it's not any less love. Okay, good. Thank you, Gil. Good.
Yeah, but
what's your second?
I needed to get more clarification about, you know, that point that you were making with Mahamuni. But were you trying to say that just because we are eternal and that we have nothing to do with the body, that doesn't mean that the mind of the soul doesn't change? You know, because we were saying in the previous class that...
Well, I'm just saying is it's yoga and sometimes Vaishnav, whatever it is, but... The concept goes something like this. If something's eternal, it can't change, right?
Right, right.
If something's eternal, it can't change.
Hmm.
So therefore, how can the soul be this one minute and be that the other minute? It's changed.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But you know, it can be... But, you know, that would even deny the inconceivable potencies of God. You know, it denies love. It denies so many things. But the point I was making is if there's nothing, the soul is eternally pure, then what does it matter what's doing with the matter? If it has no effect on the soul, right, because there's no transformation, there's no... feeling, there's no misconception. In other words, if there can be no transformation, if the soul doesn't have a mind, some type of function where it has thoughts and feelings, then what does it mean? Who cares if it's liberation? It has nothing to do with you. The mind then has nothing to... If every sentiment and thought is only in the booty, then why is it why when you become determined in spiritual life, right? What's becoming determined? It means that God is just changing the form. If you're not having any influence on that, it means that God is just changing the form of the mind to determination, that God is changing the form of the mind to wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Then has nothing to do with you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then what does liberation mean? If it doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
If it's,
mm-hmm.
It's all. Okay.
Yeah, for now.
What?
Yes, for now.
Mercy. Anything else, Gail?
I think that's good. Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Vajrade.
Vajrade, I sent some message to Govardhan. I've been running around like crazy, but I'm just finalizing one thing, and then I'll give you a date for the program, okay?
Oh, thank you, Maharaj.
Yes, your husband, is there a particular date? It's only on Saturday that the programs are?
What programs, Maharaj?
When do you want me to come? What the week? Is it a Saturday or any day or what? Is it best on Saturday? What?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Rajarati. Anybody else like to say hello?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Anybody else? Okay.